Welcome to episode number 110 of the China Flexpat podcast. Today we have a guest who makes money speaking Chinese, and this is really impressive because, as you all know, my name is Francis, and Sophia and I, we wrote a book about learning Chinese. So this topic for me is very, very interesting. With this, I give the stage to Stu.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to speak with you today. My name is Stu. I am British. I lived in China for 4 years in total, 2 in Chengdu and then 2 in Kunming. And now I'm back in the UK in Manchester. And what I do for a job, Francis, is I work for myself. I'm a freelancer and I make marketing videos for UK companies in Mandarin Chinese, so they can offer a localized way of engaging with their audience and describing their brand, their products, things like this.
What is it exactly that you do as a job, and how do you get customers to pay for this?
So what I do as a job is I make Mandarin marketing videos for UK companies. Very often it's difficult for Western companies to market to Chinese audiences because the landscape is so foreign and the language barrier is so high. So I help to bridge that gap, essentially. I will approach a UK company in an industry where they typically have a large Chinese target audience. So we're talking universities, boarding schools, these kind of places. And I will write a script which sums up their offering in the optimum way for a Chinese person to receive it. So talk to all of the values that Chinese people typically have. I will then go to their location, present it, film it, and then edit it into a subtitled, localized marketing video that they can ping out on their own platforms to attract and convert more Chinese customers.
Why would they work with a British person and not with a Chinese native speaker for this purpose?
Essentially, we present a different context. If a British brand works with me, then it further accentuates their Britishness and their British heritage because they have a big northern British lad presenting in Mandarin in the video. And lots of brands, they do sell off brand Britain in the UK, so this helps further promote that angle. Also, you'll know yourself, in China, there's quite a curiosity about foreigners and especially foreigners speaking Mandarin. I always use the analogy that when I lived in China, if I was on the subway and I was with a Chinese friend, if I started a conversation in Mandarin, you can look around and you see everybody just, they're eavesdropping, you know, their ears perk up and they're listening to what this big foreigner is saying. So that concept transfers into marketing as well. Marketing is all about being different and catching attention. And if a UK company uses a British guy speaking Chinese in their promotional materials, the Chinese audience are likely to, oh, this is quite interesting. This is different. The other universities, the other schools aren't offering this. So it commands their attention. So it hooks them in and it also commands their attention for a longer period of time. So it has marketing benefits in the sense of being different. Another reason is because quite a lot of my clients are location-based. So as we say, schools, universities. If you have a British person speaking Mandarin in their welcome video, it automatically makes the institution project a very friendly, welcoming message to potential Chinese clients. So in summary, it's threefold. Number one, it accentuates the Britishness of the brand. Number two, it's unique in a marketing perspective. It captures attention. And number three, it presents a very cross-cultural, friendly, welcoming image for the British institution.
When did you start with this? When did you come up with the idea that you can make money, you can build a career with your Mandarin skills?
That was always the plan, Francis. I originally, as I'm sure many of your listeners too, I moved to China for a gap year, hadn't lived there long when I found I absolutely loved it and I wanted to stay there for a long time. Started learning Mandarin, found I was good at it, I could learn it quite quickly. And so because I had no other life plans available to me at the time, I put all of my eggs in that basket very early on and I said to myself, I'm going to use this Mandarin to build a career. It's okay if you're on a gap year and you haven't got your life figured out because you're learning Mandarin and you're going to use it to build a career later on. And when foreigners learn Mandarin, we all have different strengths and weaknesses. People who are more introverted tend to prefer the shumian aspect of it, the reading, the ancient text, the characters, and lots of those type of people lean towards translation when they're ready to work with Mandarin. But I was always more outgoing. I love speaking. I love conversations. I love communicating. So I gravitated towards the kouyu. Creating Mandarin marketing videos was a good way to utilize this in a workplace environment.
Why did you start your own business and not just take a job?
I came back from China right at the beginning of COVID, straight into a 7-month lockdown at my parents' house. After a few months, I got a job working in sales. I was working for a student accommodation company. China is a huge market for these guys in the UK, so I fit in quite naturally in the role. And I did quite well, albeit it was COVID and very choppy waters. And I saw the need for good videos when it comes to Chinese clients. Because if you think, quite often the services we sell them are very expensive. The family is usually paying for it. They're in China. They want as much information as possible. And the most effective way to transmit information is through video. So when I worked in sales, I would see good videos literally make or break deals. People buy for different reasons. Some people are visual buyers. Some people are detail orientated. But I found that if you can provide better information to the Chinese target customers, then they're more likely to buy the product. I also, when I was working in sales, I just had lots of ideas. I was fresh back from China, had lots of ways that I wanted to market to Chinese people and different ideas, creative ideas that I had. But when you work in sales, you're limited to the sort of typical script that you use every day. So you're within these limits, and I really wanted to break out and get creative and explore different things. So I decided to quit and start working for myself.
Let's just think about the alternatives. If you consider staying in the UK, so what kind of options would you have to get paid work?
I think the most available options are sales and service roles. Anything to do with education, anything to do with university. China is a huge market for these areas, so you'll find all sorts of sales and service jobs related to it. The internet is a fantastic resource. You can connect with people from all over the world, so you're not just limited to opportunities in the UK. So another popular choice for Mandarin speakers is to go into translation, which is a remote job you can do from home. It means you're working with characters every day. You're still enjoying using Mandarin. But again, there's less of a creative element to it. You're translating texts that other people have given you. And I wanted to create my own things, so that's why I lent towards making rather than working with pre-existing materials. So sales, service, and translation jobs are all very available for Mandarin speakers looking to have a more sort of stable daily life working in a company.
If you talk about translation, like you just said, or other jobs, even sales, how would you say, what is the reason why any company, Chinese or British, why they would hire a British person speaking Chinese, even to translate, rather than a Chinese person?
Let's take translation, for example. I stand on the side that translators should only be translating from their second language into their mother tongue. I think that to meet industry standards, the copy you produce has to be mistake-free. It has to read as persuasively as possible. So looking at Chinese companies who want to translate into English, I would only recommend using English native speakers to do that. Much the same way, I wouldn't feel comfortable taking a translation job translating into Mandarin because my language skills aren't industry level. There would still be mistakes in the copy, which projects a negative image on the company. So there's a little bit of context here, depending on who you are and what language you want to market or to translate into. I still think there's value in having a British person speaking Chinese in many different roles. It gives such positive connotations to a Chinese audience. In answer to your question, Francis, it all depends on context. It all depends what's going to get you the optimum results. Another example being if you're a Chinese company who wants a sales director in the UK, it would probably be better to use a British person rather than a Chinese person because they're more familiar with working culture. They're more familiar with how to interact with local people, what gets the job done. For example, in Britain, humour is a big part of our daily interactions, and this can be leveraged really usefully when you're trying to sell somebody something. But for a Chinese person, it might be very unusual for them to crack jokes with somebody they're trying to do business with, especially if they're seen as being slightly higher up in the pecking order than them. It all depends on the context and what brings the optimum results.
You made the decision to open your business, and what were the main challenges that you faced along the way?
The first challenge was to define specifically what I wanted to do, because I left my sales job with the notion that I was going to make Mandarin videos, but that's quite a broad subject area. At the start, I wasn't sure whether I was going to make TikTok videos or whether I was going to make corporate marketing videos. I wasn't sure which videos suited me. I wasn't sure if I wanted to make vlogs, but I found filming outside to be very uncomfortable. So it's a constant learning process where when you work for yourself, you learn a lot about yourself. And the beginning was very difficult, just defining exactly what I was going to do and the value that I was offering people. Because when you say you make videos to somebody, there's so much room for them to get confused and misinterpret exactly what you're trying to do. When I first started, I just made videos for YouTube, entertainment videos, put them online, and Chinese sites as well. After 3 months of doing that, I started reaching out to companies. One of the first challenges you'll encounter is, how do I get work when I've got no portfolio? I had no professional portfolio behind me. How am I going to convince people that I can make nice, effective, professional videos? The second challenge is, to my knowledge, there's nobody else doing this. So UK companies aren't used to the proposition that I'm putting in front of them. They aren't used to having a local guy saying, I can make you a video in Mandarin Chinese. This is why it's going to work. This is why Chinese people are going to like it. If you've lived in China and you understand the context, then it seems like a bit of a no-brainer. But if you're in the UK and you have little understanding with China and how it works, then it might take some persuading to bring you on board with the values of having this context of marketing resource.
So what was the moment where you thought, okay, now customers actually understand what I try to sell and they book me and they pay me?
It's a gradual process. It doesn't happen right away. When you start working for yourself, the work is few and far between, and it gradually builds up over time. I first realized that there was a market for it and it had potential when a boarding school reached out to me and said, let's do some stuff, we've got Chinese customers. Shortly after, I began working with a company called Vitabiotics, who are the biggest producer of healthcare supplements in the UK. We're talking like a multi-million pound business. And I made a Mandarin brand welcome video for their Chinese platforms. And then I made some product introduction videos. And then in a couple of weeks' time, we're working on another project together, shooting some social media stuff out in Manchester city center, which is going to be terrifying. It was just an accumulation of portfolio and an interest from British companies in different industries that led me to think there is a market for this. But I want to be straight up with you, Francis, and your listeners. It's still tough going working for yourself. You have to fight really hard for every client and to retain them. And you've got to deal with periods of time when there's not work coming in and it makes you a little bit more anxious. And it's just all part and parcel of being your own boss and ultimately having all the responsibility on your head. So I don't want your listeners to think that I'm some super successful online guy so far. I'm not. I'm still working hard at it. But I think, as with any business, it's a very gradual process. It takes years and years of time to establish it and get it to working to where you want it to be.
And how important is localization in China?
It's extremely important. I went to an Alibaba marketing event in Manchester recently, and the one thing everybody said was localization is key. It's critical. In the West and in China, we buy products for different reasons. A good example I saw was an advert for a Porsche. in the UK, the advert was some young, single, trendy guy, you know, with a very attractive woman next to him cruising through the countryside or some beach road. But in China, the same product was advertised as a successful family man. He had his kids in the back. He had his wife next to him. He probably had a very stable business and things like that. So the West, we projected a very sort of sexy, desirable image. In China, we projected a very stable, family orientated image of the same product. So it just shows that we buy things for different reasons. So localization, it's important because you need to sell to the most desirable reasons of each marketplace. I mean, we're talking about language. We're talking about the ability to understand the marketing materials in the first place. Because if I'm a British company, if I'm Vitabiotics and I only make English speaking content, the market isn't going to understand it. They're going to engage with it less. They're going to be less attracted to it. And ultimately, they're going to sell less. So you really have to localize it, get rid of the language barriers, the culture barriers, and then you can sell things more effectively to any given market.
Stu, you work with both British customers and clients, and also you do a lot of business with Chinese companies. What's the difference in working with them, and what did you learn in this process?
The workplace culture is entirely different. How British companies function and how Chinese companies function is entirely different. Our attitudes towards work. Being from Germany, Francis, I assume that you have a very practical, hands-on, direct style of working. But in China, that's not the case. In China, we know that the way of working, it's what we call wei wan, which means it's not so direct. It's ceremonial. There's lots of reading between the lines. There's lots of yeses that mean no's, and there's lots of no's that mean not right now, but maybe later on. So you have to have more patience when you're navigating the Chinese market. And I found that working with Chinese companies, being in group chats, being in group discussions, the way that they interact is different from UK companies. Typically, the managers have first and final say. They get a lot of respect. So if I put an idea forward, members of the team will likely sit back until the manager has voiced an opinion before they comment on the suggestion at hand. It's very hierarchy-based in a Chinese company. In a UK company, my manager, if we have good banter between us, I could maybe crack a joke at his expense or, you know, go and put my arm around him and we play tennis at the weekend or something. But in China, it's more formal, traditional, hierarchical structure in companies.
And how do you feel if you talk to your British customers, business partners this way? How do they accept your advice in dealing with China? Not only your videos, but also your advice.
Quite often, they'll readily take my advice because they have no other reference points for the Chinese market. A lot of what I do is consulting. I make videos, but when we write the script, it's marketing consulting. I'm advising you how I think the best way to engage with this market is through your copy. So because of my experience and because I have a portfolio of videos speaking Mandarin online and I'm demonstrating a knowledge of Chinese culture, the people I work with are generally very flexible and willing to take on advice and suggestions when it comes to getting their resources out there and engaging with China. That's been a pretty smooth part of every project so far.
If you look back on your time in China, what did you learn? What are you most grateful for which kind of learning?
It sounds very cheesy, this, but I learned an awful lot about myself. I went there a boy. I came back a man in my eyes. I lived in a different culture. I saw how Chinese people are so caring with their families and that they look after their older generations. And me and my family, we actually grew closer whilst I was in China because the distance made us keep in touch more and make more of an effort with one another. I learned Mandarin, which was a massive self-confidence booster. I found something that I was good at and that was hard to do. And that made my parents proud of me, which improved our relationship again. And I just learned a lot about the world and what's important and what's not. It was a really transitional period in time for me. And even though I've left China now, my world still revolves around China. My partner's Chinese. I make a living speaking Chinese. We watch Chinese videos on YouTube. We eat lots of Chinese food. It's still a massive inherent part of daily life. And I really do hope we can go back when travel opens up again. Just for a holiday at first, but maybe to live one day. I've closed the first chapter of my experience in China, but I'm hoping there's many more to come in the future.
So what's your advice to other people flexpats who follow your steps, who go to China maybe to just to study or to live or to work, what's your advice?
Go for it. Don't go over there and make friends with a bunch of other English people and go drinking in bars every night. Go over there with the intention to absorb as much of the culture as possible, to meet people from all over the world, in general, just to get as much as possible from the experience. And I advise anybody listening to go to China. Learning Chinese is really, really fun. Being in China is really, really fun. There's chaos and interesting things going on all around you, and it's brilliant. It's a fantastic lifestyle. Whether you go for 6 months or whether you go for 10 years, I'm sure that when you're older and you're looking back at your life, you're going to be glad that you stepped outside of your comfort zones, did something brand new, totally different. And I'm positive that you'll get a lot from the experience, no matter how it manifests itself when it's done.
Stu, thank you so much. 谢谢,再见.
Thank you very much, Francis. Yeah, everybody go and buy Francis's book. I'm sure it'll help you unlock your potential in the future too. But it's been brilliant speaking with you, Francis, and good luck with everything.
Thank you very much for tuning into the China Flexpat podcast again. If you want to help us, the best way is tell your friends about us. Take a screenshot of this episode, share it with your friends, and tell them what you learned today. We also want to take the chance to tell you a little bit more about the book Chinese on Your Terms, which was written by Sophia and me. You can take the time to tune into episode 75, where Sophia and I had a discussion about 1 year ago how we recommend our friends to learn Chinese. And the result of this discussion was this book. You can find the details in the show note. You can buy it on Amazon and read it on your Kindle reader. You can also contact me directly, and then maybe we can find a way to send you a printed book to your address in China. So just reach out to me directly and we'll find a way. Thank you very much. 谢谢,再见.